Howdy, listener, and thanks for tuning into our podcast, The Movie Log, A Journey Through Cinema. My name is Izzy.
And my name is David. Each week, one of us will pick a movie that the other has not seen. We will deep dive into our individual takes and historical background of the movie.
Please subscribe to our podcast and follow us on Instagram at TML A Journey Through Cinema and Twitter at TML A Journey. Hello, everybody, and welcome to The Movie Log, A Journey Through Cinema. Today, we are traveling to 2004 to discuss the film A Very Long Engagement, directed by Jean-Pierre Jeunet.
Jean-Pierre Jeunet.
Starring
Audrey Tautou.
Gaspar Ulia, and Jodie Foster.
Okay. That was pretty close.
Do you need me to say it again?
No, I'm just going to cut in. Okay, that was pretty close.
Thank God, because that was such... For having a French last name, these names are super complicated.
Oh, dude, I have a feeling if I was actually grew up in France, my accent would be bad even then. I can have a hard time pronouncing French names.
I know.
I love the films. I have a hard time talking about them.
Yeah. So, A Very Long Engagement is about a young woman who searches for her missing fiancé that went missing in the trenches of World War I. So, Dad, this is a very beautiful film. It's more traditionally on the side of, like, great cinema. So, why did you pick this movie?
Well, I picked this movie because of a couple different reasons. I was going back and forth with two films that Jean-Pierre Jeunet made, City of Lost Children, which may still end up on our show because I love that film. I was going back and forth with these two films, and I thought this would be a good one to launch the season with because it is kind of of his films, it's the one that's the most... You can say is the most traditional, but it's really not if you actually look at the way that he uses a lot of the same techniques he did in Amelie, in City of Lost Children, in Delicatessen. So I felt like this would be a good choice. So also, I wanted to – a lot of war films are told in American audiences and in America are pretty much World War II and after, and from a very – American-centric point of view, and this is World War I, and it's from the French point of view, and it discusses that war in a very unique way. I'm also a big fan of Audrey Tautou, so I was like, okay, we'll throw that in. And I also, in a weird sort of way, wanted to show you that there's films about war that aren't centered around war. So a lot of times people talk about war films and all they talk about are the films that are like the films that are centered around great big battles. And this film really has to do with, even though there's battle scenes in it and there's aspects of the war told in flashbacks, it's really about the after effects of what a war can do to you, and a war that's that damaging to every character in this film is affected by the war in a very negative way. There's nobody comes out of this war, even though France technically won, unchanged. So I really thought it was a really interesting film that we could dive into and start talking about. You know, if you're going to make a war film, what will set yours apart from just making a film where you have enemies on one side, you're good guys on the other side, and you're just charging and having a battle scene.
So you mentioned a different point of view when it comes to war. Could you expand on that?
Well, the different point of view on this in this film is that A is told the main character is the fiance of one of the soldiers, and she, even though she has received word that he has gone missing, presumed dead in the trenches, she never gives up hope. And so she, after the war, takes place in 1920, which is 2 years after the war, something happens that gives her like the hope that she's not just pretending, and she actually starts to investigate and tries to find out if her fiance actually did survive the war. The different point of view comes from the fact that it's told from the people who were on the home front in France. So much different than the American home front, because we had a whole ocean separating us between either the European theater or the Pacific theater in World War II. The French home front was like literally where the battles were being fought, as well as even if you were on the other side of the country, you were relatively close and feeling the you were feeling the effects of the war. And so you get her point of view, you get her uncle and aunt's point of view, you get the people who were left behind and didn't fight's point of view, but you also get the veterans who are coming back, who have come back from the war, their point of view, and then you get from those veterans, you get their lovers too. And there's multiple women who are affected by the loss of their husbands and lovers and boyfriends, as well as, you know, following the main story. You see how this war has affected the psyche of a country. So you see it from that different point of view, whereas a lot of war films, even war films that are post the war, deal usually with one person's struggle with trying to overcome what they did in the war, or they, you know, reassimilating to the society, or their war films are talking about, you know, the battle and what's happening from the soldier's point of view. And so this was a very different point of view, which I enjoyed. And because there's also not very many modern World War I movies. A lot of World War I movies were made between the wars, between World War I and World War II. After World War II, of course, a lot of movies focused on World War II, especially out of America, because America played a much, much bigger part in World War II. And it's considered the good war because you're fighting Nazis. So it was like you had these instant bad guys for your films. So it was much easier to make films like that.
I thought this movie was very interesting because of the fact that it focused on women. You've taken me to the movie theaters and we've seen war movies together and movies that focus on World War I and World War II. And there's always a male-centric point of view to it. And I'm not discounting what the men and soldiers had to go through on the front. But there's always this one scene in like every war film ever, especially when it has to deal with World War I or World War II, where there's this like soldier that you've been following through this whole movie and he like ducks because of the bombs or something, and he like finds his little shelter, and the shelter always has a kid who's usually a young girl, like 6 to 11, or a single mom with a baby.
No, there's usually, it varies, but there is. It depends. It depends if the battle is set in a town.
Yes, but it's a very cliche thought that I've always had when it comes to these movies, and that's like the only clip that we get to see of like how this war has affected others, besides the burnt out churches and the farms that are burnt out and things like that. But this is like usually in war films, those are usually the only two like outside characters that we get to see that this war affects. And I thought it was very interesting that they decided to focus on start the timeline 2 years out of the war and focus on a family and a group of people that didn't fight in the war. And I thought that was very interesting.
Well, it's also very interesting because in the structure of the film, what leads to her fiancé going missing is that he's one of five soldiers who get disciplined for self-mutilation, hurting their hands or another part of their body so they can be sent home from the front. And there's scenes that set this up, and you find out that some of the soldiers did do that. Some of the soldiers did try to shoot their hand or another part of their body, and some of the soldiers didn't. It was an accident, but it happened to happen to their hand, so they were thrown and lumped in to the group. And So these five soldiers were disciplined and then sent over the top into no man's land as their punishment. And of course, the Germans were going to kill them. So that was their sentence. These characters aren't necessarily heroic in the classic sense of heroism. They have done heroic things before they got beaten down by the war and decided to do what they decided to do, or the accidents that led to what they were going to do. And I think that's the thing that really was kind of sets the tone. It's like you realize that of these five guys that, so this is important because as she goes through trying to find her fiance, you're never quite sure if the rumors are about her fiance or one of the other five guys. And so you're going back and forth and there's, you know, yes, no, we don't know who it was. And that kind of information is that she's learning is very important, but it also shows you she's learning the other soldiers, their girlfriends, their wives. And there's some mirror characters in there that show how these women have coped with the loss of their significant other, that showed that she's full of hope, but these other women lost hope and how they had to cope. So it's a very interesting setup for the film. And I thought that was very interesting too, because usually you have the guy that everybody's chasing after, trying to find out if he's alive or dead, is usually a hero, or in the classic term. And these were not heroes in the classic term. They were very much flawed humans, and the whole war was flawed. And if you understand what France did during that war and how many men died in that war for France, before the war, France had one of the largest standing armies in 1914 behind Russia and Germany. And by the end of the war, they pretty much had used up most of their army and were using supplementary forces from their colonies, from Vietnam and other places, to fight the war. And so it's kind of hard to explain that to people nowadays when they go, because they think of France from, in America, they really think of France from World War II, where France didn't put up much of a fight and ended up surrendering, and half the army ended up becoming Vichy, which means that they worked with the Germans. And so that's the American viewpoint of France. The French army, it just went through literally a meat grinder. What happened in Verdun, a generation of men gone, which why their psyche changed and what this movie was talking about. You could see the damage in the people after the war, and how even though they won, quote unquote, they didn't act like they were winners. It wasn't like everything was okay. So,
well, I also thought it was, speaking of not heroes in the heroic sense, usually when we talk about winners in war films, they're everybody is heroic. Not like even the generals to the lowest man, they're like, we're fighting for a cause. I'm great. And I thought it was very interesting that they decided to show a corrupt
general.
That's
a common viewpoint about the war.
It could be common, but a lot of these war movies that I see, they don't show that.
No. There's a couple movies, like there's Paths of Glory with Kirk Douglas, directed by Stanley Kubrick, which is takes place in World War I on the trenches, and they're French soldiers, which again tackles that. There's a couple other movies that do it. I mean, you have to think about this: the first 6 months of that war, the war is pretty fluid. The last 6 months of that war, the war starts to become more fluid. And the 6 month mark is, I'm being very generic, meaning people are fighting above ground and armies are moving. The war is from 1914 to 1918. So the 3 years between those first 6 months and those last 6 months, is pretty static. You're in these trenches that could literally go from the sea all the way down south. They pretty much stay in these trenches for 3 years with very little adjustment. When you think about how many men are fighting for this and how much raw material they're using, not very much changes. In fact, they end up fighting the same battles over and over again. There's Ypres and Somme. Like they fight these things at one, they have number one, number two, number three. These battles are like, and some people argue that this all the same battle. So why are you giving them different names? Because basically they just keep fighting the same along the same line. It is just constantly fighting, and so the Western Front should be called the Western Front, and they fight the whole time. So. And I'm kind of going off on a tangent here, but the point is that the war was very fluid, then static, then fluid. And the war changed so much, so quickly, that the generals couldn't – they were all trained in 1850s and 1860s with much different armies, much different weapons. So they didn't understand literally what they were doing. They didn't understand that when you sent these men over the top, that the machine guns and the rifles were so accurate that it was going to be devastating, but yet they had to still fight that way. There wasn't a way. They didn't have the tools to break away from that, and not until the tank gets developed and starts showing up in 1917, a little bit before that, but really in numbers in 1917, do they really start breaking through on that? And I think that's in the plane, and there's different things that get developed throughout that war. Which today we look at them and go, why didn't they just do this? But then they fought a much different war and they had different tactics and they were still trying to use it. And so the a lot of the generals were learning on the job, unfortunately for the men. So what that led to was there's a lot of people that feel that the French generals especially, and some of the English generals were just sending their men to slaughter. And I think that's where you see that corrupt general is like, that's a very common viewpoint. And it is sort of backed up sometimes. There were some generals who were kind of like, well, that's what they are. They're men. You send them above the, but there were also a lot of generals who weren't trying to do that, but they were kind of stuck with the tactics. When we talk about what the men fought, and what they did and what France went through. It's amazing that anybody came out of that thing with any type of normalcy.
This story is a very heavy story, though it is a very beautiful film.
Yes.
And you did mention that Jean-Pierre Jeunet was an animator.
Yes.
How do you think his animation background helped bring a story like this to life?
So his films are marked by having certain fantastical elements, hyper-realism, this quirky sense of humor that pops up every now and then. He'll focus in on everyday things seem grander than they really are, or he'll focus in on something that somebody does or an animal does or whatever, and it shows you this quirky little piece of humor. So when he brought that to this film, this film could have been a very dramatic, like every scene was like heavy, but there's a lightness of touch there. You do see people living and laughing and trying to pick up the pieces and moving on. You even see Matilda, Audrey Tautou's character, laugh and live and still try to do things while she's looking for her fiance. And the reason I think why that really makes this film is like, you see the hyper realism helps this film is because you're following the story, and in some ways it's very emotional. And if you just shot World War I, which is the trenches are very gray and every day is brutal and every day just beats you on down. By the end of 2.5 hours, you would just be numb. But because he's going back and forth from the war to the battles to this life, it makes the horror of the men that had to fight this battle seem that much more horrific instead of just hitting you over the head over and over and over again. And so I think that's where his animation comes in, is the style, the way he puts the camera, the way he uses color. He'll speed up the camera, slow it down a little bit. He'll do those type of things. And he'll sometimes he'll just have a wide shot, and the joke will play in front of the wide shot, and you get to see the whole action, and it's hilarious, and it moves on, and he moves on. He doesn't do a bunch of, if it tells that he's really good about picking shots to tell a story very efficiently. That's where I think his animation comes in. And it also makes it so when you're watching the battle scenes, he tones that down a little bit, so it becomes very, like I said, horrific.
Yeah, I definitely do think that there's this juxtaposition of gray and yellow.
Yeah.
Throughout this whole thing, I definitely associate Audrey Tautou's character with like bright, shiny yellow sunflower, or not sunflowers, but the flowers that were in front of her.
Yeah, the house.
Her house and stuff and things like that. And because everything is very bright and cheery and yellow, when you see this juxtaposition of gray and dull blues with the bright, cheery colors of the flowers and the yellowness of the scene, it's very interesting when Audrey Tautou's character gets really bad news. You can see a storm brewing in the horizon, and it slowly turns into this like dull blue color, dull gray color. So it kind of allows the imagery of the war seeping into everyday life. And I think that's a very interesting way on how to use colors. Instead of being like, the war was bad, it's affecting everybody's life. It's like,
yeah, there's definitely, and I think that's one thing about him being an animator, and he definitely sets up colors and tones for different things. A lot of the actors that were in this film had already worked with him on Amelie, and there was definitely parts of that in Amelie as well. For the way that he uses color too, it's like her fiance has a red mitten on his hand when he gets sent over the top. And so there's a one spark of color that you see in this whole gray thing is this red mitten. And at first you're thinking it's just a weird little note that this guy has a red mitten to cover his wounded hand. And eventually it becomes a very important little detail. And so I think that's another thing too, is that even though there's just these fun, awkward, or different little details that he puts in, they all eventually tie into something too. So they're not wasted. I think that's another thing too, because you can be quirky just to be quirky, and the quirky moments always have a payoff.
I also think the hyper-realism of everyday life is brought forward with his use of different filming techniques.
Yeah.
Like there's these cutaways to like what we would consider like home videos.
Well, no, they're more like newsreels.
Yeah. Well, I was talking about the beginning, and then there is definitely in the beginning where he's like explaining, or the narrator is explaining who these people are. There's definitely like this home video film quality to it. When a character dies, there's this 1920s black and white newsreel of the execution.
Yeah, he definitely uses the fact that World War I was the first filmed war.
But I thought his use of cutting away and kind of taking away from the cinematic view, where it's like long and big, to something that's like square and small, it did definitely add a lot of elements to it that I really enjoyed when it comes to.
Yeah, and it makes you see it from a different perspective.
Yeah, and that's for one of the reasons why when I mentioned to you earlier today that I feel like this movie and Amelie are like brother and sister, because they have the same DNA. They yeah. have a lot of these elements, like the cutting away to newsreel type video and things like that. But definitely one is a little bit more mature thematically than it is.
Amelie, the world is whimsical, and you're going with the whimsy. And in this movie, the world is whimsical and it's working against you. And that whimsy is working against you. And it could be both a positive and negative force coming from whimsy. And so I think that's the thing too, that, yeah, I do see them being very similar. And for one of the reasons, Emily, she's looking for the guy with the pictures, so she's on her own hunt. And in this one, Matilda is also on a hunt for her fiance. So there's structurally some very similar things. I just think that this one is, yeah, you can see it's more mature because it's dealing with a much heavier subject.
Yeah. One's definitely like young romance feel, and this one's definitely like a man who's definitely been through romance before, talking about the hardships that
kind of what we were talking about too, is he uses humor as like, sometimes there'll be a humorous moment and then a very tragic scene, or a very tragic scene with some little touch of humor through it. And it's in a weird sort of way that makes it feel more real. It hits you a little bit harder than I think if they just played it straight.
Yeah. The two jokes that really stay in my mind is the reoccurring joke with the bike messenger, where he keeps falling over the...
Oh, the rock, first it's gravel, then it's cobblestones.
Yeah, and he keeps falling over and wrecking the garden no matter what. And that made me laugh every time. But every time he was also bringing Matilda...
a letter that could be bad or good.
Yeah, and he was like the ruler of the fate. Of her fate almost. And so it was kind of that weird, again, I'm going to say this word, juxtaposition of humor within the tragedy. And also one of the other jokes that stuck with my brain is when Marion Cotillard, when she's about to be executed, she tells Matilda, the only thing I don't regret murdering all these people and I don't regret my actions. The only thing I'll regret is that they have to cut my hair before execution. So when I go see my boyfriend in heaven or in hell, I'll be looking like Joan of Arc. And I thought that was such a funny... Granted, she says in a fewer lines and a little bit more tighter than that. But I also thought that was very funny as well, because it kind of just, again, shows the humor and the tragedy.
Well, that's the thing too, is that you see the tragedy because her lover ends up going over the top with Matilda's fiancé, and... she finds out something that's very important to the plot, and that sends her on a quest of vengeance, which eventually brings her downfall. And that's why she's a mirror character of Matilda, because Matilda gets some of the very same information, and she doesn't go on vengeance. She just tries, she's trying to figure it out and find the answers. And so you have these two characters that are like, this is Tina Lombardi, the warped sense of what would have happened to Matilda if she had responded differently. And there's a lot of these characters in this movie where they're like, this is the main character. And then you see a mirror character that's kind of like, this is what they would have been like if they had reacted differently. I find that character also very tragic, because she can't let go. She ends up choosing a life of vengeance. And you see her at the end, she's trying to say that she's okay with where she's ended up, but you also see how haunted she looks. And the ending is not a happy ending, although it's a bittersweet ending. I mean, there's no way that you can get around it. I think it's the only way that the movie could have ended.
Because, yeah, definitely a small part of me thought that the movie would end with her and her fiance together. It's already stated that he has lost his memory, but for some random reason, my brain kept on thinking on the ride to the hospital where he's at, my brain kept on thinking that he would be there and he would just be he would write MMM, which is like a main motif throughout the whole movie. So it's like this little spark that he'll remember Matilda. No. And that's what my brain thought was going to happen, because usually these movies, they can't end on a sad note or something like that. And no, there was no reassurance that he would ever remember the love of his life because of this war. And so it's kind of this...
Yeah, I mean, World War One took a lot of things away. I mean, if you think about it, during the war, it ended one empire, the Russian Empire. At the end of the war, you had the Austro-Hungarian Empire just crumble and be broken up. You had the Ottoman Empire being broken up at the end of the war. The two surviving empires, Britain and France, were never the same again. It was a downward trajectory after that. What you're seeing in this movie is the people reflecting that. Their life is never going to be the same. A lot of the people are just hollow. They're going through the motions. You start to see why these people would make these choices, because they just went through a very brutal time. And so brutality, they're kind of numb to that.
One thing that I noticed is that throughout this movie, there was this motif and this theme about family.
Yes.
You know, building families together, trying to get back to your family. Not just the main character, Matilda, trying to get back to her fiance, but like just one soldier who literally does everything to get back to his family. Not just Matilda's character trying to get to her fiance, but family is such an important message in this movie that I think that it's very... that adds to the bittersweetness of it, because a lot of these families are broken and...
Yeah, the families got ripped apart. And the families got ripped apart and they were trying to get... So people either built new families out of the pieces of broken families, or they were, like Matilda, trying to desperately find the missing piece. And so it... I found, you saw, like, when she went to small towns and she walked in the bar, there's this barman and this woman, and she obviously doesn't have anybody really. And they have a very familiar tone to each other. And it's like, you start seeing these like created families, and they're trying to do the best they can in the situation that they have. So did you enjoy this film?
I did enjoy this film. It's a very bittersweet film. It was a little bit confusing, to be honest, and I thought Amelie was a little bit confusing, just because, you know, it's a French film. Doesn't mean that just because it's confusing doesn't mean I didn't get the story and didn't enjoy it. This movie definitely plays with the timelines a little bit, so sometimes you do definitely get, you're like, what timeline are we in? But I think it's a beautiful movie, and I think it's a very enjoyable movie, especially for a movie that has something to do, with such a hard concept. Did you enjoy it watching it again?
Yeah, I noticed some things I hadn't seen before in the past, and I liked the flow. I got to really kind of watch some of the camera work and some of the transitions because I knew what was coming on. I thought that was really fun. He did some really great planning there. The story, it was still very, shockingly, still very brutal when it was supposed to be brutal. And I was still emotionally tied into the story, even though I'd seen it before. So I was, that tells you it's a pretty film when that kind of story, you've seen it before, you know where all the pitfalls are and all that kind of stuff, and you still get emotionally wrapped up into it. What I really enjoyed was all the character actors and all the actors that were in this brought something to the film. And so you really had a fun time watching all the different aspects of this film.
To whom would you recommend this movie to?
I'd recommend it to anybody who wanted to see a really good film, and anybody who wants to watch a war film that isn't really, I mean, you can make an argument that this is a war film second and a romantic drama first. That wouldn't be a far off assessment. I think because war is so central to this film that even when it's not on the front or it's in 1920, it still is very much for me a war film. I'd recommend it to people who really want to watch a really good historical drama that has a lot of different layers and takes on head on a subject that isn't taken on very much anymore, which is the after effects of World War One. If you want to study world history, especially 20th century history, you have to start with World War One and the years leading up to it, because pretty much everything that we are dealing with, even now in the world, has its roots in post-World War One, when they broke, like I said, all the empires that broke up, how they just partitioned the Middle East, how they started partitioning parts of Africa, countries like Yugoslavia and Czechoslovakia just being created. You know, those type of things, those after effects are just things that we had to deal with, are still dealing with. So if you want to really understand the political climate of the world, you should probably study a little bit about World War One, so you can at least understand where the stuff comes from. And World War Two is very much, if you start saying World War One, World War Two is very much the sequel in Hollywood terms. It's a little bit bigger and a little bit badder, but in scope, meaning how much of the world is actually fighting at the same time. But as far as just men and material, World War One is much bigger. So would you recommend this movie to somebody?
Yes, I would recommend it to a lot of people. Like you said, like you mentioned before, this is definitely a romantic drama first. And I think a lot of people, especially in today's climate with romantic dramedies and rom-coms being so high in everybody's list, I definitely do think that this movie is a really good movie to put on that list. Probably checks a lot of boxes for a lot of people.
Like you said, it's a very pretty film to look at. It's a very well-crafted film. And even though like you jump back and forth between the war and 1920, I never felt lost. And I feel that they did a really good job of explaining what's going on. And it also talks about the brutality of war without showing you a war scene over and over and over again. It's like, cause you see a lot of the after effects and you see a lot of the way that people, the men look. If you're watching a war movie with somebody who's not particularly fond of war movies, this would probably be a really good choice.
I also think that this movie would be really good for people who like serious murder mysteries or serious mystery movies, yeah. Because there's this same, night that's played over and over again from different points of views, and it adds each puzzle piece together. And I didn't know what was going on until the very last minute, and I love puzzles. And so I was always kept you on your toes. It never disappointed. I definitely recommend this movie for people who, like you said, you know, who want to watch a war film with somebody who doesn't really particularly like war films, or somebody who really loves mysteries.
Or somebody who, like me, who's seen a fair share of war films, and sometimes they start feeling very redundant. I find it very entertaining to sit there and watch a film that is challenging you in some way.
Yeah. And hey, if you're an American, you should watch it just to see Jodie Foster speak French. I didn't know she was in it, and then halfway through the movie, I was like, hey, wait, is that who I think it is? So it's a, you know.
I don't think being French should stop you from watching it.
No. So thank you so much for listening to this episode of The Movie Log, A Journey Through Cinema. We really hope that you enjoyed it. You can follow us on Instagram at TML, A Journey Through Cinema, or on Facebook under The Movie Log. We also have a Twitter at TML, A Journey.
Thanks for listening.
Thank you for listening.